So we're here in Chulin on Daf Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis. So let's see exactly where we're up to. We're going to start with Debei Rav Yishmael Tana. So let's see if we can find that. It's about, I would say, halfway through the daf. Do you see a Tosus Dira Maska Klaya Kerem?
Yeah.
So straight across from there.
Yeah.
So let's just introduce what we know. The Torah tells us that you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. And that's Lo Sevashel Gdi B'Chalev Imo. And that appears in Parashas Mishpatim. And appears over and over again, three times in the Torah. But never does the Torah tell you that you can't eat bas v'chalav, or you can't have hanah for bas v'chalav to feed it to your dog. So the Gemara's been spending quite a bit of time trying to figure out how do we know that bas v'chalav is asa b'achila, asa b'hanah. How do we know it's not just the Torah says you can't cook it? So we had a few different possibilities. We might have learned it from the parasha of Korban Pesach, from the parasha of Dam. I mean, many different Yalfuses over here. But now we have the most famous one, which Rashi actually quotes in his Pirush al Torah, and that's the very Rabbi Shmuel Tana. Lo Sfashel Gediba Chalev Imo Shalosh Pa'amin. The Torah repeats it three times. Echad le'isra achila, v'echad le'isra hanoa, v'echad le'isra bishul. So the Torah is telling us that you're not allowed to eat basa b'chol, you're not allowed to cook basa b'chol, you're not allowed to enjoy basa b'chol in any way. Now the obvious question that we have to ask is, so why did the Torah confuse us, so to speak, by telling us don't cook basa b'chol? Why did the Torah just specify achila and not, you know, give us this generic term about bishul and then repeat itself three times? So one of the various answers that we suggested was that the Torah wants to tell you that the only time it's also to eat basa b'chalav is if it was cooked together, which means it doesn't mean you have to cook the basa b'chalav together, but it's got to be cooked.
Right.
And although we had all sorts of prohibitions in this perek about not putting it on the same table and not eating it in the same bread, you know, the same mouthful, and there was no bishul involved, but nevertheless, those are all drabbanos. But on a doraisa level, what the Torah prohibited is actually bishul. And that's what the Torah is telling me over here. Good, so that's what we have in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, and it seems the impression you get is that Rabbi Shmuel doesn't really need any of the other drushes that we had. Because this is like a cut, you know, a whole new slice. And the principle that he seems to be working with is called an Eino Inyan, meaning if I don't need it for Bishul, because the Torah has already prohibited Bishul, so Tneu Inyan Achila. And now that I have Achila, why does it have it a third time? And the answer is for the Iser Hanoh. Now you might ask the following question. We have a principle which is attributed in the Gemara here and also in Pesachim to Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo's famous principle is that when the Torah prohibits achila, then what's included in achila is also the Isar Hanah. Unless the Torah went out of its way to permit Hanah, which was the only case that we had was what? Was Nevela. You remember that the Torah Nevela says, like, Gereshev Sharecha Titnena. But in the absence of an explicit license to permit Hanah, then the assumption is that Achila is just a more profound example of a larger set which includes all Hanah. But the reason why that would not give us in Basa b'chalav, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Iser Hanah, why does Rabbi Shmuel still need a third pasuk, right? To teach you Hanah, and you can't rely on the principle of Rabbi Avo that Achila includes Hanah, is because the Achila includes Hanah, according to Rabbi Avo, that's only when the Torah mentions Achila. If the Torah mentions Achila, it specifies it, then we assume that Achila means Hanah. In any lashon of Achila, lo sochal, lo seyachel, lo sochlu, but here the Torah never mentions Achila, it only mentions Bishul. So there's no way that if I didn't have the third pasuk that I would derive the Iser, Hanah. Now it seems that this drasha of Rabbi Shmuel appears not only here in Chulin, but also appears in the Gemara in Kiddushin. And I have a note here that the Gemara, usually Rav Ashi, who organizes the Gemara, he's the final editor, Ravina Rav Ashi, he will include his drasha because it's his opinion, even if there are other opinions. It's very strange, Rav Ashi, here in Masech Techulin, derives the Iser Achila in Bas Bechala from Kol Toev Lo Tochal. And that appears here, earlier on this daf. But in Masech Kedushin, which is the parallel sugya, there Rav Ashi completely omitted his own sheet that we should derive Bas Bechala and Achila from Kol Toev Lo Tochal. And not only that, it's interesting because the Rambam and the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch, they all quote Rabbi Shmuel. Nobody mentions Rav Ashi's Kol Toev Lo Socha. It seems like Rav Ashi himself dropped the ball, you know, because in Masechta Kiddushin, he doesn't mention it. So it's very interesting because he has a sefer here called the Binyan Tzion. The Binyan Tzion was, I think, Ettlinger. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He wrote the Aruch Laner.
Oh, yes.
He was the Rebbe of Rav Shimshon Falkhurst. Right. Back in Germany, you know, almost two centuries ago. So he suggests that, I'll read it to you, he says that all the drashos that we had until now, Einam drashos gemuros. They're not complete, total drashos. They're not totally reliable. He says, So, for example, if you take Rav Ashi and you have lo sochal kol to'eva, so then you have to ask yourself the question: can we derive the Isra Hanah? This drasha of Rabbi Shmuel has the added advantage to it. Of deriving from a special pasuk, the Iser Hanah, which we don't have in the other judges. So that's Rabbi Avo. So if we attach Rabbi Avo to Rav Ashi, then we have the two of them together, and then we could produce the Iser, we could derive the Iser Hanah. But I guess he's saying the following, that the added advantage of Rabbi Shmuel is, number one, that we have a special pasuk in the Torah for the Isra Hanah, and that, number two, Rabbi Shmuel answers the question why the Torah had to repeat itself three times and prohibit Bishul. But then on the other hand, he says we need the other drashas as well. Why? Because im haTorah lo haiser omezes b'makom acher sheyesh Isra Achila v'Hanah b'bas v'cholof, although none of those other drushes are local in the parish of Basa v'cholof, but they are a remez that Basa v'cholof would be Asa v'Achila and then b'Hanah. So he says we need that remez, because otherwise, he says, lo yim amidim es halav shenemer l'gavim bishul b'Isra Achila v'Hanah. So basically, just to summarize what the Binyan Tzion is saying, that we need both A and B. We need all the other drushos, but the final drusha is going to be this drusha of Rabbi Shmuel. That's what we're going to accept and codify l'alacha, that the Torah repeats itself in the Isra Bishul three times to set up an Isra Achila and an Isra Hanah. And the reason why we're not satisfied with this drasha alone, right, is because maybe the Torah is prohibiting bishul, right? We have a principle sometimes when the Torah wants to emphasize how severe an issur is, it repeats itself. Lava lo b'shnei lava. Are you familiar with that principle? Like the Gemara says, it says lo soshak and lo so tzigzol, lava lo b'shnei lava. But if we could find some other remez in the Torah, even if it's not local in the parasha of Bishul Bas V'Cholov, and that's going to be, for example, Rav Ashi in the parasha of Lo Sochal Kol To'eva, or according to Rebbe in the parasha of Dom, and then we had the parasha of Korban Pesach, wherever you find it, so that already gives us an indicator that there's going to be an Isra Achil in Bas V'Cholov, and even an Isra Hanoah in Bas V'Cholov, but it's not satisfactory. Why? Because it's not in the parasha Bas V'Cholov alone. So if we only had Lo Sefashal three times, that itself would not necessarily give us Achil and Hanoah. If on the other hand we only had all the other indications, then that wouldn't have been satisfactory either, because those are not local in the parasha Bas V'Cholov. But when we have A plus B, then we could build this. It's like a piggyback, you know. This drasha that we're learning now in Rabbi Avo, in Rabbi Shmuel, is piggybacked on top of all the other drashas that we had until now. That's the shita of the Binyan Seal.
I just want to make sure, because Lo Tevashel Dvi Bechelav Imo, we've used that in multiple cases. So Tevashel is being used here, and before we're using Gedi v'chelav imo, or was it Gedi was used separate from chelav imo? I mean, we've broken this up and used it in many discussions.
Right. But now what we're talking about, Eric, is the lav itself. Do you follow what I mean? Mm-hmm. Thus, we're not going to specifics what constitutes Gedi and what's called chelav imo.
I understand that.
But the Torah repeats this lav three times and says that whatever it is that's osur, you're not allowed to cook it, and the Torah repeats something, you're not allowed to cook it. And a third time, without changing any of the rules of the game. So that really begs the mind. So if one way of saying it is that the Torah wants to be so emphatic about it and wants to make this profound impression on us, and the Torah wants to, you know, sock it to us, you know, that the Isur of Basa Mecholov in Bishul is a very serious Isur. You know, Bishul is not something that the Torah commonly prohibits. Even on Shabbos, Bishul is also only because it's a malach, and not the Torah's bishul. Right. So we really, you know, yeah, no,
I'm more asking just in terms of the structure. By using Lo Tevashel three times here, that doesn't preclude us from all the uses we had before with Gedi v'chelav imo.
What we're doing is we're taking Gedi v'chelav imo, we're sort of putting it in brackets, if you follow what I mean, and then we're looking at the Lo Tevashel.
Right.
So whatever it is that we're not allowed to cook, that's inside the brackets. But the Lo Sevashel, which generates a lav of Bishul, that the Torah repeats three times. Why did the Torah say whatever it is that's called Gedi v'chelav imo, and we'll have all those drushes to try to work out the innuendos and the minutia. But Lo Sevashel, whatever it is, you can't cook it. And the Torah says that three times. And that's what Rabbi Shmuel is bothered by. Why would the Torah repeat itself three times? Again, we could have said, Lav rolo b'shlosha lavim, and the Torah wants you to know that you're really violating a serious Isur. But he's saying, no, it's coming to expand the Isur. So we discussed before, so why did the Torah confuse us by calling it Bishul, to tell us that whatever is Osur b'achil is only because it's Osur b'bishul. But the Chiddush of the Binyan Tzion is that we shouldn't view Rabbi Shmuel as independent, you know, as if this is the A and the Z, you know, the whole story starts here and ends here. But that the drasha Rabbi Shmuel is based on all the different Ramazim, you know, that we had before, but those are only called Ramazim because they're not really written in the parasha of Bas V'Cholov. You know, we could logically analyze that what's called To'eva. You know, the Torah doesn't want you to create this Bas V'Cholov, and then the Torah says Lo Sochal Kol To'eva. So Rav Ashi says, apparently the Torah meant to say that you're not allowed to eat this thing called Toev, and that's Bas V'Cholov. So that's why I wanted to share with you this insight of the Binyan Seal. So I just want to take a minute, Eric, to introduce you to Arvin. I don't know if you've ever met.
Arvin.
You both davened in the Shtibuch, right?
Well, just today.
Just today.
Usually I'm davening Ol Rivka.
Ol Rivka. Where's Ol Rivka?
It's in Hari.
Hari. Oh. Is that where there's a, I don't know if it's in that shul or nearby, there's a beautiful mikvah, I remember. On Rehov
HaRi. No, it's not that Rehov HaRi, it's Yad Tamar. Yeah.
Somewhere on HaRi, I remember.
It's closer to the traffic light, it's Yad Tamar.
That's right.
So let's go on. And again, as I mentioned to all of you, you know, I'm thinking about Daf Yomi, but maybe we'll have to negotiate this, whether we want to continue with Kol HaBasar and finish up the Perek, which will take us another month or so, but the other alternative would be to jump into Daf Yomi before they get too far ahead of us, because they're moving at the speed of light, as you know. And I never did Masechta Brachos in Daf Yomi. I never did. Daf Yomi was never my thing, but my feeling is that I'm eager to jump in. There's been so much hype about Daf Yomi.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So my wife has already calculated at what age I would finish us if I start. All right. Tanya, we have a Braisa, Isi Ben Yehuda Omer. So now we have another drasha with another source for the Isa Achila and Isa Hanon Basa Bechalov. Minayin Basa Bechal Shasur. How do we know it's also? Let's assume the Gemara means also b'achila, and then we'll figure out from whence we derive Yisra HaNoah. Nemar Khan, here in the Parsha of Basav Cholov, which is in Parshas Re'eh and Dvarim, the Torah introduces the Parsha with the words, Ki Am Kadosh Atah. So if you take a look, for example, in the Torah Or, if you have that, you'll see that he has here the following. Let me read the whole pasuk. It says, "Lo sochlu kol nevela." Okay, so that's the beginning of the pasuk. Then, after the Torah prohibits nevela, it says, "Ki am kadosh atol Hashem Elokecha lo svashel gedi b'chalev imo." So the pasuk begins with nevela, ends with Bishul Basa V'Cholav, and wedged in the middle of these words, Ki Am Kadosh Atah. And now, Isi Ben Yehuda has a Gzer Shava. Why? Because this word Kadosh appears, albeit in a slightly different form, in a different Pasuk, which is back in Parshas Ki Tisa in Sefer Shmos, and there it says, Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. And again, the word is Kodesh, Ubasa Basada Trefa Lo Tochelu. And that's the Iser of Trefa. So the question is, what can we derive from Trefa through this Gzeira Shava to Basa Bacholov insofar as the Torah in both contexts?
There's also the Lotva Shal there, right?
Let's see. Let's go through the Pasmi. Anshe Kodesh Tiyun Li. Then it says, Lakelov Tashlichu Noso. But what it's, the opening verse, the opening introduction to the verse of Trefa is Anshei Kodesh Tiyun. So if we take that word Kodesh and we put it together with the verse of Basa B'Cholov, where the Torah says that Am Kadosh Atal Hashem Elokecha, so we have this Gzeirah Shavah of Kadosh and Kodesh. Now you could ask if Kadosh and Kodesh are exactly the same word. You have to really know the rules that apply to Gzeirah Shavah, to what extent do they have to be exact. But there's no question that the two words mean the same thing, that you're a holy nation, or holy people. And what is Trefa now going to tell me and teach me about Basa B'Chol? Malahal and Asur, just like in the case of Trefa, it's Asur, Afkan Asur. Now the thing about Trefa is that Trefa is Mutar V'Hanoah. So if I have an animal that has an injury to one of its internal organs, its vital organs, then that animal is not allowed to be eaten. Even if I go ahead and shech the animal, I could not be Matar the Basa. The Basa is completely prohibited. And basically, what happens in the case of Trefa is that there's no heter shchita, which means that Trefa doesn't lend itself to shchita. Now, what do I mean by saying that Trefa doesn't lend itself to shchita? If an animal dies without shchita, that's called a nevela. In this case, it's a live animal that's a nevela. Why is it a live animal that's a nevela? It's walking on all fours. but it's going to die. And the Torah says if it's going to die, then there's no heter shechita. If there's no heter shechita, then for all intents and purposes, let the animal be dead. I'm not talking about the Isur of Eved Menachai. Don't ask me about that. What I meant to say is that al pi halacha, once the animal is determined to be a treif, it has the same status as nevela. Now, as we emphasize many times in the parasha of nevela, the Torah says like Gerashem and Sherechet Nena, meaning that's mutar banan. Hence, treifa, which is already an anticipated nevela, in other words, we're being mocked in as a meuchar, we're saying that later it's going to die with shechita or of a natural death without shechita, and it's going to be nevela. Right now, it already has the isa nevela to it. Why? Because there's no heter shechita. You cannot shech the treifa al pidin and be mocked in the basar. So now we're going to look at this treifa, and we're going to say that it's nevela. And that means the treif is also b'achila, but it's mutar banan. So now, if we're going to use this gezeirah shav of kadosh kodesh to teach me that basar b'cholav is also included under the law of achila, then that will not generate an isar hana. And here's the disadvantage, so to speak, the drawback of Isi ben Yehuda as far as the comparison to Rav Ashi, because Rav Ashi had lo kol toeva lo sochlu, right? Lo sochlu kol toeva. And Rav Ashi was able to apply the principle of Rabbi Avoh that since the Torah says lo sochlu kol toeva, achila means hana as well. But we don't have that luxury in Isi ben Yehuda. That's Gemara's next kasha. Gemara asks, v'ein li ela b'achila, b'ana minayin. So you might say, well, Bas B'chol should go a step further, and the scope of the Isur should be greater than that of Treifa. But we have a rule, Dayol Levamen Adin, Leos Kenodim, that if A is teaching B, then B cannot exceed beyond A. So if A is the Malamed, and that's Treifa, and Treifa is also B'achila B'mutar B'anah, then B, which is derived, and that's Bas B'chol, would likewise only be Mutar, would only be also B'anah, or B'achila B'mutar B'anah. So now the Gemara is going to embark upon a Kal V'chomer. Now I just want to say by way of introduction, this Kal V'chomer that we're about to learn is going to occupy our minds for I don't know how long. I mean, I don't even have an anticipation. I don't even know if by the end of the week we'll understand this Kal V'chomer. And I spent a lot of time trying to figure out the first line of this Kal V'chomer, and I got so confused. But maybe, gentlemen, you'll help me out over here. So, Eli el v'achila v'anah minayin amrit kal v'chomer u'ma orla shelo nevda ba'avera asura ba'anah is bas of the cholav she nevda ba'avera eno din she asur ba'anah. So what happens in the case of orla is that the tree is producing its fruit for the first 3 years and the fruit is asur ba'anah. And we're going to see how we derive that orla is also banah. The Torah says you even have to burn orla, because you're not allowed to benefit at all from orla. Now, orla and basar b'cholav are both asur b'achila, that's for sure. And they're both asur b'isur lav. I emphasize this because I was thinking that maybe the Gemara could have derived the Kal V'chomer from Chametz B'Pesach, because Chametz B'Pesach is likewise Asur Ba'anah, and Chametz B'Pesach is likewise Lo Nevda Ba'Avera. There was no Avera that you did, because you own Chametz, and the Torah says you're not allowed to eat it on Pesach. But Pesach is always, I'm sorry, Chametz is always considered excluded as far as drashas are concerned, because the Torah is very machmir with Chametz, and if a person eats Chametz with Pesach, he's chayv karis. All on the other hand is a low case lav, so we're a little bit more comfortable to derive conclusions from Orla than we are from Chametz with Pesach or Klai Akerim, which is also asur banah, because all these isuri anah, especially in the case of Chametz, are very chomer. Each one has its own chumra. But orla seems to be classic, in the sense that it's an isur lav, and the most severe punishment you would engender would be malchus, nothing more than malchus. Not that malchus is so good, but it's a regular onesh. And also, orla is something that lo nevda ba'avera, that it happened in the natural universe. the Torah might be more machmir in a case of nevda ba'avera. And that logic we've already encountered with Rav Ashi. If you remember that Rav Ashi said kol to'eva lo sochlu, and why is basa b'cholav osu b'achila, why is it called a to'eva? Because you illegally created basa b'cholav by cooking them together. So the Yisra'chil is already, also, after you have a cheftz of basa b'cholav, it's already asur. And you've done an avera in order to create this. That's what we call nevda b'avera. But Rabosai, is this really so? This is where I can't get my head wrapped around this gemara, because I don't know that basa b'cholav is nevda b'avera. Does anybody know what I'm asking? I mean, I'm sort of hinting as to what bothers me, just to see if you'll.
Well, the bishul is the avera, though.
Correct, but is it really true that if I, here's basa b'cholav on the table, yeah. Is it absolutely the case that this was nevda b'avera?
Not until you do something.
Obviously, but who did something? Yeah. But do you know what I'm going to ask you?
No, what is nevda? What do you mean by nevda?
Nevda b'avera means that in order to create basa b'cholav, I had to violate the isur of bishul. Is that really true?
I've done an avera.
Is that really true? That's not true at all, what I just told you. I mean, that's what the Gemara says, but it's not true. Don't believe the Gemara for one moment.
You have to do it. It's that you have to cook it together to...
No, it definitely has to cook together, but is that called an avera?
The cooking itself is not usually an avera.
Correct. Well, how did it get cooked? Let's say, for example, our Mishnah here on Kuf Ches, what happened? You remember there was milk, and it was meat, and he was cooking the meat, and the milk spilled onto the meat. That was tipas chol shenafal al-kader. Or, for example, let's say a goy cooks basa b'cholav. It's no less basa b'cholav than if a Jew cooks basa b'cholav. Or let's say, for example, a katan, a child, would cook basa b'cholav. He didn't violate an avera. There's no avera by a katan. I mean, that's questionable, but let's assume there's no avera by a katan. So I can give
you... it was an action. It was a masa.
Well, okay, so... But
so what about doing an avera?
But what about a case where the wind blew the milk onto the
meat? It was a masa. Oh, I see.
That's not really a masa. I don't know. Yeah, the wind... I mean, you could say in Babakana...
I had a pot of milk sitting next to the pot of meat, and...
And the wind blew it over. Yeah, I have to... Right, the milk was...
That's no worse than Arlo, you're saying that.
Yeah, I'm saying that just like all exists in the natural universe, you could have something that exists in the natural... Maybe it's not originally in that state. You know, you won't find basa b'cholav in its natural state. But the Gemara is going very far here. The Gemara, the whole basis of the Kal v'chomer, why should we be more machmir in basa b'cholav? We can say, well, if in the case of Orla, the Torah says it's also about no, how much more so in the case of basa b'cholav, it's got to be also about no. Why? Because never the ba'avir. You know, Avera is with a capital I in over here. Well, what about Avera? I don't know that basa b'cholav is because of an Avera. I need Bishul, but I wouldn't call that an Avera, you know.
But I mean, there's an action, though, that takes place.
Right,
I mean,
right.
The Orla exists whether you do anything.
Correct.
Or not.
But again, is that, if I would ask you just intuitively, a knee-jerk reaction, would you be more machmer in something because it only is produced as a result of some change in nature? In other words, you have X, which is Orla, that's in nature. You know, the tree produces its fruit. I don't have to get involved at all. And now I have something where something has to change. Basar and Cholav exist in nature, but I need to get them together in a bishul situation.
It's like Shabbos, that way.
Is that a reason why I want to be more machmir? You understand, the Gemara is using a logic here of a Kal v'chomer.
Well, yes, because you're creating... Okay, so this is something that is normally allowed, you know, milk and meat, there's no problem with. You're taking an action. Now, let's ignore the issues of a katan or a
wind,
but just the specific action that's prohibited is a person going and choosing to cook milk with meat. So they're taking an action of something that's permitted and instead making something that's us
prohibited.
Right, they're taking so in doing so, that's an avera. So if they're doing that, if with Orla, which just exists on its own, you can't benefit. Why is it you should be able to benefit when you actually took the act to make two things that were perfectly fine if you didn't do it, and you've now made a something that's
an entity
that's prohibited.
That's right.
You've created something that's like Orla. It's prohibited. So why should you be able to benefit?
Okay, look, I'll tell you the truth. If gentlemen, if you're comfortable with this Gemara, I'm not here to make you uncomfortable with the Gemara. But I'm not totally comfortable with this Gemara. But Eric, you know, I'm not saying everything you said is correct. I'm just, I think what you're saying, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to reformulate it in my terms, and you'll tell me if I'm... What you're saying is that although there are circumstances in which Basa B'Cholov emerges without an Aver, but since the Torah says that there is an Aver to do the Bishul, so the Torah is already setting up some Chumra here in Basa B'Cholov. And once I have that Chumra, I can expand it even to scenarios in which there was no Aver that was done.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
If that
reflects
that
what you're saying. Okay.
I mean, would you want to say that the other cases of, I mean, there's an implication from that. The other instances are not real bishu, are not neva avera,
right?
But maybe they're not really us at the same level either.
That I don't know. I have to tell you, honestly, you're not going to pull rank here, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I've been learning a little bit about Basa B'Cholov, I can tell you that there's no difference in halacha between A and B, between A where the milk fell because the wind pushed it down and went into the pot of meat, or Yisrael, or whoever did it and put it and cooked it together. And there's not even a nuance of a difference in halacha.
In terms of eating it. But in those cases you didn't have the Avera of Bishul.
Correct, but I'm just saying, I don't want you to think for one moment that the entity of Basa B'Cholov changes in halacha between A and B, between Nevda B'Avera or Lo Nevda B'Avera. If it's an entity of Basa B'Cholov, because as we said, the wind blew the milk down into the meat, once that process has happened, the entity that emerges is identical to the case where you did an Avera. You get Malchus.
It's not because they're a Rabbanan at that.
No, right. We're talking about Basa B'Cholov D'Oraisa from A to Z from beginning. I think what you're saying is that since the Torah in this context did offer an Avera, and the Torah says that you're not allowed to deliberately cook them together, so that already gives a chumra to the entity of Basa B'Cholov as a concept. If you
I would say
you
know, more than that
in abstract,
because the Torah doesn't explicitly say cooking or benefit. It does it in the construct of intentionally cooking it together. So the other ways that it gets cooked together, you know, they get included in, but the primary formulation is the act, right?
Okay. Now let me ask you another question. Again, I've been racking my brains on this Gemara. I'm going to present you two scenarios, and you'll tell me if one is more chomer than the other, if you think. Okay? What in your mind is more chomer? Case A, where the Torah says that this entity, this foodstuff, is prohibited from its creation, from the moment that it came into this world, next to the hero, from the moment it was created. Or B, when you have two elements, each of which the Torah says is fine, and each is mutter, but you combine them together and that creates an isa. Do you have a knee-jerk response as to which should be more chomer?
The second.
You think the second. I think the first.
I think the second, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the first one. That's his choice. But if we go and we make something that's us, or we've essentially destroyed some of his creation, because now we've made it, so I see.
Oh, so you're giving us sort of like a philosophical explanation. We've changed we've altered God's rules. I was looking at more from a halachic perspective. What do I mean by halachic perspective? When you have two things that are mutter and you combine them, then halachically you may create an Easter, but that Easter really has vestiges of the original state. In other words, you took heder and now you put an Easter on. I'll give you an example, neder. Very often, neder is more kal, in halacha, is more lenient than other Isurim. Why? Because, let's say I have a piece of bread here. This bread is mutter. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. You know what I mean? Say, there's nothing despicable about it. I can eat it. But then I made it into a neder, and I said, kikar zu alive a neder. So I've superimposed an Easter. That's like a man-made kind of Easter on something that the Torah says is mutter. Then I would say, in the case of neder, that it's lakula. Why is it lakula? Because the essence of the object is heder. In other words, and you want to get a little philosophical.
Permitted act to do that also.
Yeah,
that's true. I admit to you that in the case of Vos v'Cholov, he did a no-no. Again, if it was a Jew and he was mature and so forth and so on, but really, what do you have here at the end? You have Bosa and you have Cholov. So you've taken two items, each of which is Muta, and you've combined them. So it's true that the Torah says don't eat, you know, something that has a taste of Bosa and a taste of Cholov. But if you would ask me, I would say Arl is a lot more prohibited, so to speak. It's more Lechumra, because Arl, in its very emergence, the Torah says that's a Chefetz Bisurim. You know what I'm saying? It's Osir from... You know, every single fiber is awesome, you know.
Let's say on Shabbos, like somebody, you know, you have something gets cooked by accident, it just is cooking, it's
right.
You know, you're allowed to eat that.
Correct.
Right? But if somebody goes and intentionally cooks it, it's prohibited to them forever, right?
Well, that's on the Rabbanon.
Okay. But
because the Rabbanon were afraid that you shouldn't benefit from an avir.
But it's a Rabbanon. But I mean, the idea of halachically that where we, you know, when you intentionally do something, there's. I mean, are there any other situations where maybe it's deraisa where you're?
That's one thing. Is a parallel deraisa. In a sense, when we say Maisa Shabbos is also, that's because it's a knas.
Right.
Where we want to penalize you and don't benefit from violating the Shabbos. Do we have any sort of deraisa? I don't know. I'd have to really go through all of. I don't know. You think of anything, John? The parallel deraisa where the Torah says we're going to penalize you. Maybe, but no. I was thinking about chametz because, you know, if you own the chametz, maybe the Torah says that since you didn't get rid of the chametz, we're going to penalize you and say don't eat the chametz. But
right.
I don't.
Well, if you don't know what's there, if you know it's there and you keep it, then it's two different.
Because chametz would be also, even if you didn't violate Ba'yir or Ba'yir Matzi. Let's say, for example, if I were Hashem to eat a piece of chametz that's hefker, it doesn't have any owner, the Isur would be no less chomer than if I maintained ownership on my own chametz and violated Ba'yir Matzi. But anyway, we're getting off on that.
That's only if you know about it. If you didn't know about it, then you wouldn't. So in other words, there's still a certain amount of intentionality to it.
Right.
If you find you have it and you say, oh, this is hefker, then
right.
You're not.
But Eric, let me give you another example. Do you remember that back on Daf Kuf Ches on the base, we had an opinion that says Efshel is Soto Mutter.
Right.
Again, exactly, that's a complicated concept, but what it basically means in general terms is that if you could separate the Bosa B'chol, then everything becomes Mutter. Which means that Bosa B'chol is not a permanent Isur, it's not irretractable. According to that Mandiyom. Now the other Mandiyom says, well, you'll... According to Ramban's pshat, that you'll never really be able to extract the bosa from the chol and the chol from the bosa. It's like e'ef shalaf freedom. You'll never be able to separate. But that's the technicality. In concept, bosa v'cholav is only almost a conditional, a temporary isur, so to speak. What do I mean? I mean, it's not going to automatically become mutter again, but theoretically you could be matir, which means that really you always... What's lurking in the shadows in Bosa B'chol is always the Bosa and the Cholov as two separate entities. Each one is heavy.
But that makes it even worse. But that makes it even worse because if you could make it, but if you could separate and make it Matzah again, then you can benefit from each separately. Right. But by leaving it together and not separating it and trying to benefit from it, it's even worse. So I think the
difference between me and you is you're looking at it from the perspective of who's the bad guy here. You know, like this. Do you remember, this is probably before your time, there was something called Mad Magazine?
Yeah.
Do you remember there was Spy versus Spy? Right. Remember? There was the black guys and the white guys, you know, Spy versus Spy. So you're looking at it as Spy versus Spy. Like in the case of Arl, I didn't do anything. You know, I'm just, I planted a tree and in Yiddish we say, was bin ich schuldig? Why am I guilty? What did I do over here? But in Bosa B'chol, if you're a no good bum, you're the spy in the black, you know, thing, because you cooked it and you could have separated, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not looking at it from that perspective. I'm looking at it from a perspective of the object itself, the cheftah, as we call it.
Right.
The cheftah of Arla was always despicable. It, you know, the Torah says, stay away from Arla, burn it.
Right.
I don't want this Arla. That's not the case with Basa B'chol. Basa B'chol always remains a kind of a combination of two things that are essentially mutter. Now again, from the perspective of you're a bad guy, I wouldn't want to beat you up, maybe I should say that Basa B'chol is more chomer than Arla. But from the perspective of the Chefta di Sura as such, I would say that Arla is more chomer.
But why can't you, from a Kal Chomer perspective, why can't, I mean, there is I mean, even if you're doing it from the kind of philosophic perspective, it is a level of chumrah that you know, in other words, you can look at it from an, you know, Kal Vachomer,
right.
You can, a lot of the Kal Vachomers, if you look at it from a different angle, you can say, well, how is it not, but...
So that's what I want to show you here, Eric, that I think if I'm reading the next line of the Gemara correctly, which I want to do with you now, I think the Gemara is saying that in order to produce a Kal Vachomer, you have to be absolute about it. Meaning, if I can say this for it, then I can say the opposite for it. That's not really a bona fide Kal Vachomer. Let me see if I can try to prove to you that I think that's where the Gemara is going. The Gemara says, this is called a pircha, Mali Orla Shekein Lo Choysa Lo Shas HaKosher. Okay. Just 1 second. Okay, so... that's all it says over here, but I'm going to fill in a few more words in the Gemara, so speak. Tomar ben Basa B'chol Sheh Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. So let's try to understand what this means. Rashi. See if you can find the Rashi. It's like halfway down the skinny lines of Rashi. Lo Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Pri Ha'orla Be'isr Gadel. Meaning it's in a state of Isur, that's how it grows. Aval Basa B'chol of Haisalo Shasa Kosher, Kodem Shenitan Basar B'chol. And the Gemara is now asking the following question, that we should be more Machmir perhaps in Arla than in Basa B'chol, because Basa B'chol never had a moment that it was Mutter. So if you have something that had a moment of Heter, then that's on a lower level, that's kal, relative to something that never had a moment of heter. And again, I don't want to influence you or prejudice you, but I think what the Gemara might be suggesting is this flip side, and that is that if something has a shasa heter, then it's only skin deep, that the isur is sort of like a wrapper on the outside of the object, but what that wrapper is telling you is don't have hanah, or don't have achila, from something that inherently is mutter. And that's a light kind of an Easter. No, it's a real heavy Easter, something that in its briyaso, in its very state of being, as it was created, was asur. And that's called lo hoysel shasa kosher. So now the Gemara is going to do what we call a tzara shod. A tzara shava means if I can't derive A from B because of one reason that makes B unique, then I introduce C. And even though C itself could not possibly derive A, but nevertheless it's enough to plug it up, and then we're going to do a tzara shava. So that's what Gemara is going to say now. Comments with Pesach Yoksiyah, meaning don't assume that every Isur Hanah in the Torah has to be based on the fact of Lo Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Because take the example of Chametz. Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. This is a brilliant move in the Gemara. The Gemara is saying, look at Chametz. Chametz is really unique. The whole year round, like 358 days out of the year, it's Mutter. And now all of a sudden, for 7 days, it became Asur. So inherently, Chametz is something that's Mutter. Just you wrap it up with an Isur for 7 days. And yet the Torah says it's also Hanah. So you see that the Isur Hanah has nothing to do with Lo Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. Now again, if you were to now substitute Chametz for, if you would substitute Arla for Chametz, meaning let's take Arla out of the picture, because Arla is Lo Haisa Lo Shasa Kosher. So it's also Mitchilas Briyoso. Now let's plug in Chametz. Now Chametz is also Hanah. And lo nefta ba'avera, let's assume, then how much more so should Basa B'chol be also ba'ano? Because nefta ba'avera, so the Gemara says, ma'alu chametz v'pesach shekein anush karetz. So if I only had chametz v'pesach because the Torah was so machmir in chametz, I can understand and justify the Isur HaNoah. The Isur HaNoah is part of a package of the chumrah of chametz. And that doesn't tell me anything about Bas V'Chol. I can't derive Bas V'Chol because Bas V'Chol doesn't have this element of a Chiyuv Karis. Bas V'Chol is a classic lav. You see that if the Gemara now would have put together Arla and Chametz, it would be beautiful. Because if you're going to tell me that the reason why Arla is Asav HaNoah is because Lo Haysa L'Shas HaKosher, then you're telling me that, well, the Isra HaNoah is generated by the fact that Lo Haysa L'Shas HaKosher was also from Tchilus B'Yoso. Well, I'll show you one example in the Torah where something was not also from Tchilus B'Yoso, and yet, nevertheless, it's Asav HaNoah, and that's Chametz B'Pesach. So that should now give me the gumption to go back to Arla. But you see, the Gemara doesn't want to work that way. Why? Because the Gemara doesn't want to assume that even if I find one example where it's Haysal HaShas HaKosher, yet it's also Ba'adah, that I could derive a conclusion that Arla is going to teach me Basa Mechol. Why? The Gemara rejects that logic because Arla remains Lo Haysal HaShas HaKosher. So what the Gemara is really saying over here is that there could be one of two reasons why something is also Ba'adah. It could be because it's Lo Haysal HaShas HaKosher. It could be because it's an Isur Karis. None of those apply in the case of Basa Mechol. So if I were to derive Basa Mechol from Arla, I'm going to say, well, no. Basa Mechol is relatively Kal because Haysal HaShas HaKosher. And if I'm going to derive Basa Mechol from Pesach, then Basa Mechol is relatively Kal because it's only an Isur Lav and it's not an Isur Karis. So that's why the Gemara feels that we need some of the proof that you can have an Isra HaNoah with a classic lav, and that classic lav is not what? Is not... No, I'm saying that classic lav is not an Isra Karis. That's what I mean by classic here. That's not Isra Karis. And Haysal HaShas HaKosher. So the Gemara says, Klai Akerem Yochivu. So what happens here? I plant, let's say, seeds of grains or legumes or fruits, and I put these seeds right near a vineyard, right? And there's a whole mesethical line. What is the close proximity to the vine? As a result of this, I take two things, each of which is heter. So it's Haysal HaShas HaHeter. And I create something that's called Kelaya Kerem, and Kelaya Kerem, as we'll soon see, is Asav HaNoah. And yet it's only Nisalah. It's not Nisakaris. Do you see what the Gemara is pulling off here? Kelaya Kerem is a perfect paradigm for something that is so similar to Basa Mechol, and it's Asav HaNoah. Because number one, it's similar to Basa Mechol because Haysal HaShas HaKosher. It's his action to add these two heterim together and produce Kelaya Kerem. Number two, it's similar to Basa Mechol in that it's only an Isur Lav and it's not an Isur Karis. So it has all the advantages above and beyond Arlo or Chametz, and yet it's Asav HaNoah.
So why not just use that for the Kelaya Kerem?
Excellent. So on this, I have a footnote. He says, "Gemara lahalon." The Gemara later on, Maksha is going to ask the question: "Madua hutzucha habraisa lo chiyach miklaya kerem?" Right? Why don't the Gemara just ask the question from? Why don't we just derive it from straight away from klaya kerem? And he says, "Hadifa." The Gemara prefers to go back to the original limud of Kal V'Chomer, and this is going to be the subject of this Tosis, Dira Maskil Kalaya Kerem. Do you see that Tosis? And maybe tomorrow we'll pick that up as a separate topic. But again, just to summarize what we learned today, I call it two parts to today's discussion. Part number one was that the Bei Rabbi Shmuel is going to derive Nisrachi and Nisrachi from the fact that the Torah repeats itself three times, also Ashur Gidi. And then we had the Binyan Sion who says that Rabbi Shmuel is not independent of all the other drashos. All the other drashos are indicators that give us the gumption to say that the Torah repeated this lav three times to teach us Bishul, Achila, and Anoah. That was the first thing we learned. And the second thing, which we're in the middle of, and I say it may take us till the end of the week to get out of this mess, is Isi ben Yehuda, who says that we can derive Basa B'cholov and an Isra Achila, Isra Anoah from Arla. And the Gemara vacillates back and forth, but wait a second, Arla has a certain Chumrah, although again, Basa V'Chol is more Chumrah because Nevda Ba'avera, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out why that's called Nevda Ba'avera, if the wind blows the milk into the meat. And Orla has the chumra that it's lohoisola shasa kosher. The Gemara is going to mention chametz because chametz hoisola shasa kosher. In that sense, it's very similar to basar b'chalav. It's aser b'ano, and that could be the source for this limud of this derivation of isur ano basar b'chalav. But the trouble is that chametz has a chumra in that it's aser with an isur karetz. And now the Gemara has a very comfortable zone in Klei HaKerem, because Klei HaKerem has all the features, all the similarities to Basar B'chol, but yet it's also Bahad. Okay then?
Shukran.
All right, thank you so much.